It's certainly great to be back. We've only been back in Canada for 1 week now, so please forgive me if I'm still feeling a little muddled. We're still trying to process a lot. It's been quite a trying 3 years, and we're going to be processing, I think, for the next 6 months some of the things we've seen. There's just too much coming at you in India to be able to process as you go. Since we've been back, many people have been asking us, so you must really like India now and that sort of thing. And whenever they say that, I'm kind of at a loss for words because it's really not like that. Having been in the Army, the closest thing that I could compare it to having been there is it's like being assigned to the front lines of a battle. You know that your orders are to go, and God has given us those orders to go. And you know that he has a mission and that you're supposed to do that. And we find great purpose in doing that because we know it's in line with kingdom business. It's very clear that God has assigned us these specific things to do. But at the same time, it is a battle. It takes a toll. It takes a toll emotionally. It takes a toll spiritually. Even to pray in this place that is so dark, it takes a tremendous amount of effort. Even there's almost this thickness that you have to pierce with it because there's so much blackness around you. It takes that much more effort to reach out to God and get through all of this evil that is in the air around you. So it really is trying, and it really is an exhausting process. So the closest I can compare it to is actually going to battle. And I think that's maybe why they say for missionaries when they're coming home, they call it a furlough, which is the same thing that they would call it in the Army, because you need to go back and get refreshed so you're prepared for the next battle as you go out again. As we've been there, one of the images and the key passages that has keep coming to mind, because it's grounded about what all of our roles in this great undertaking that God has given us, is from Exodus 17. And it's that image where the battle is going on. The Israelites are out there battling against the Amalekites, and Joshua's down there with the troops, and they're going toe-to-toe. This is one heated battle. One second it's going one way, the next second it's going against them. And you got Moses up on the hill, and he's just got his hands lifted in intercession, and he is pouring out his soul with so much vigor to keep these troops going and to keep God interceding on their behalf. And every time those hands are raised and the energy is being poured out, the battle is being victorious. The Israelites are winning. They're pushing the Amalekites back. And as he exhausts and his arms come down, every time that intercession started to fail and started to waver, then the battle turned. And for me, that is really kind of the image. God has assigned each of us a role in this spiritual battle and in sharing the gospel around the world. And we are troops on the ground, but without your intercession and without all of these people, hundreds of people pouring their prayer into us and supporting us from behind it like you have been doing, supporting us, we wouldn't have made it. The battle would have turned against us, and I say in the first weeks it was so easy to just say, let's get on a plane, this is just too hard. And Erin actually was a real strength in the early days, because she's saying to her parents, because she can see how stressed out we are about being here and what the challenges were, and she's saying, but we can't go home because God has told us we're supposed to be here. And it's amazing that there's always that person, and you know other people are praying, and that's what kept you there and sustained you through those really tough times. So first I just want to really thank everyone from the bottom of our hearts. We could not have made it without you guys praying for us, sustaining us, supplying us even financially. It has been a toll, and we just wouldn't have been able to stay in that battle without you. For those of you who weren't here when we were here last, about 3 years ago, as we were just preparing to go off for the first time, I'll just give you a little background on our family. Both I and Jenny didn't come from particularly religious families. We only came to faith about 12 years ago. And my own background, I was in the military, and then I worked in the disability sector with people with developmental disabilities for about 10, 15 years. And then I was a paramedic before I headed off. And Jenny also worked with people with disabilities and then moved into management within our village in Alberta. So that's where we're coming from. And we had never envisioned. We never came from missions families. We didn't know any missionaries. We really knew one family that had ever done anything like this before. So it really took us a surprise that God would even move us in this direction. It was nothing that was ever remotely on our radar that God would call us to do. But in looking back with hindsight, you know how they say it's always 20/20, we did see some early signs that he was perhaps moving us in that direction. We just didn't know where he was taking us after we came to faith. So early on, one of the big influences on us after we came to faith was a person called K.P. Yohannan, who leads an organization called Gospel for Asia. And we heard him speak in North America, and it was the first time he really challenged me to think about things from a Christian perspective, but from outside of North American perspective about things around the world and what is our duty as Christians to support moving the gospel beyond our own borders to encapsulate the entire world as we've been called to do. And one of the challenges that he threw out was to think about everything you have and the decisions you make and kind of divide it into two categories. Is this something I want or is this something I need? And if it's only something you want, then to question, could what I'm spending on this be better used for kingdom business in some way? And so as a result of that, it really challenged and really spoke to our hearts. So as a family, we ended up out of that downsizing. We sold our house. We downsized about $100,000. We got out of a whole lot of financial obligations that we were in, and we started pouring all that money into supporting different missionaries around the world. And we had no idea that we would eventually be going to India, but almost all of those missionaries were in India. But it's just one of those things that you see in the hindsight. And we also became, at the same time, started speaking on behalf of Voice of the Martyrs Canada, really speaking out on behalf of the persecuted church. And at that time, there was a whole lot of things happening in Orissa State in India where Christians were being killed in droves, hundreds of thousands of them were being driven into the jungles. And even while we were in India, I actually had the good fortune to actually be able to go to one of the churches in Orissa State. And it was just shocking. It was so humbling to see and know that everybody that's sitting in this congregation has suffered so much for their faith. And to speak to pastors who, when you get out, they're just these humble guys. And then you hear their story and how they had been beaten and how they've been spent 15 years of their life in prison purely because they've been speaking out and bringing people to faith. Things that we would never have to endure. And all of them knowing many friends that have been killed purely because of their faith. So those kinds of things were early signs, and also as I started my training to become a paramedic, I had somewhere in the vague distance a sense that God was going to use this somehow in the future for missions, but picturing much more a once-in-a-while humanitarian type of work, you know, go for a couple weeks and come back kind of thing. But that wasn't what he had in mind at all. In January of 2010, all of a sudden, Jenny and I both at the same time were just getting this real sense of urgency that we're supposed to start pursuing missions. And we wasn't on our radar at all before that, but just really feeling convicted that this is what God wanted us to do. And from there, things just moved really rapidly. And the very next month, we went to our first missions conference because we didn't really know much about missions at all. And this was a huge missions conference in Edmonton, and there were hundreds of missions organizations there. And on the very first day of this conference, Jenny and I were attending two different workshops, and we come together on break, and we're just bursting to talk to each other about what we had experienced. And while we were in two separate rooms at this conference, God had laid it really heavily on both of our hearts that, no, I'm not calling you to short-term missions. This is the rest of your life. And you are to get out there and start doing this. And we were shocked. But we were excited at the same time. And it was just such an amazing thing. Two places called at exactly the same time, basically speaking almost exactly the same words when we came together at break. And if that wasn't enough, we had left Erin with a friend of ours, our daughter, and we hadn't even told her that we were looking at missions or anything because face it, you don't want to worry your child until you actually have some information you could give them because there's just too many what-ifs that would just be scary to a child. So we hadn't told her anything that we were even looking into this. And so the very next morning, she calls up and our friend says, Erin just urgently has to talk to you. And she comes on the phone and the first thing she says is, I just have to tell you, Dad, that last night I had this dream and God told me I'm supposed to be a missionary. It was just that conviction and all of these confirming signs. But the story goes on. It's just been an amazing thing how he got us there. The very next month, I was sure God was laying on our hearts the specific place and people group, which was North India, and it was to work amongst the Muslims. And Jenny was still just getting the general sense of call to missions. So we decided we would start putting out some applications with organizations that we felt good peace with after this conference. And there were three different groups that we felt peace with. There was Frontiers, Pioneers, and WEC, who Worldwide Evangelization for Christ, which is who eventually we decided to go out under. And ironically, as we were starting this process, we said, we'll let God sort out which organization we will end up and going out under. And the one we eventually ended up peace with was WEC. And when I called them up, though, and started the process, they were the only organization that had nothing going on in India in terms of the Muslims. So they, when they were saying, we're supposed to pursue WEC, North India Muslims, and they go, well, that's interesting because we're not doing anything in North India with the Muslims, and we don't really have any plans anytime in the future to do so that we know of. But they invited us for training because they said, you never know how God's going to move. We've seen amazing things happening before. And I was really puzzled because I didn't want to take my girls into a situation that I knew would be just absolutely brutal to go to unless we were absolutely sure that this was what God wanted. So ahead of time, before we even went off to training, we started getting a group of people praying, and I asked for a lot of confirming signs because I wanted to be sure. So I asked for 7 different signs for God to actually reveal, if this is your will, and this is the place, and this is the people, that I want to see all of these things happen. And I even put a date on it. So I basically had a group of people praying that by the halfway point in our training, if this was his will, that this company, who had no plans to do so, would open a pioneer field in North India amongst the Muslims, but not just ending there. We also wanted to see at least one other family going with us, and they had to have children. So we didn't ask for much. And as we're going through the training, nothing much is happening. We're starting to worry, you know, is this the right organization? And they're talking to us. Maybe you could go to Bangladesh, or you could go to Pakistan, where you could work amongst the Muslims. At one time, all three of those countries were the same country until they were divided under the British. But we weren't getting any peace with any of that. Or the alternative was we could go to India and work amongst the majority Hindu population. No peace with that either. And then 1 week before the deadline, that halfway point in training, we come down one morning and the candidate directors are all smiling, they're all excited, and they said, we didn't know, we must have missed the communication, but the international office of WEC is opening a pioneer field in North India amongst the Muslims. And not only that, there already is a family on board to go from New Zealand, and they do have children. And so we all 7 confirming signs already confirmed. And the bonus is that in 2 months' time, there's a trip going to actually plan where you're going to start, and you can go. Just absolutely an amazing thing. No doubt after that that, yes, this is where we're supposed to end up. So just an amazing thing. Every one of those signs actually confirmed. And I did go on that early trip, and when I come back, I was just, oh my God, how am I going to take my girls here? Because it was awful. I was crying while I was in India because I go, I cannot imagine how we're gonna survive here in the areas that we knew we would be working in. There are some areas of India that would be very easy to survive in, but not where we were looking. So that's where we left off when we were here last time. Since then, we went to India, and we've been there for 3 years now. And when we arrived, it was brutal. We were in it from the start. We arrived, it was 45 Celsius out. It was just after monsoon season, and it was 45 and humid. And it didn't get any better for quite some time. I got sick from food. I think on about day one, I was projectile vomiting. It was not a good scene. When we went out for our first drive in one of these little tuk-tuk vehicles, I'm sure you've seen on TV, we're going around for the first day just trying to get the layout of the city, and everywhere we go, the driver's saying, oh, this is bad, we have to get out of here. And you're seeing all these troops pulling in and cops pulling out in riot gear, and the crowds were rioting. And this is our introduction to India, and we go, what have we gotten ourselves into? This is just overwhelming. But also considering that we went there with this other family who really, you know, we hadn't done anything before. We hadn't even done a short-term mission before anywhere. We hadn't done 2 weeks in another place, other than when I was in the Army, traveled a few places. So this was an entirely new experience. And we arrive on the ground. The other family was there a couple of months before us, but they didn't really speak much Hindi either, had a couple of words by this point. And to survive, you have to put yourself in this situation. You don't know the language, and nobody speaks English around you, at least not in the area we were in. And just to get your basic daily survival needs and set up a home, how brutal that actually was. It was basically a process of wandering around at random down different streets trying to find some place that, you know, had the food you needed. We found cookies and chips and cereal, I think, fairly readily. But beyond that, you can only go on with that for your diet for so long. But it took us quite some time to actually find some sort of reliable food source, especially protein. So first month there, I was 30 pounds lighter. You can tell I put it back on since then. But at the beginning, we couldn't find the food, especially not protein, because it's being a majority Hindi population, they're vegetarian. So very hard to find protein sources, and especially meat. But even your furniture, it was literally, there's a chair. Let's buy that chair, because I don't know if we'll ever be able to find our way back to the street again, and I don't know anywhere else that sells chairs. So let's buy that chair. I don't care what it looks like. At least we have one to sit on. And that's kind of how we functioned for quite some time, trying to initially set up. It was challenge beyond. But beyond the climate and beyond those, there's this crowd. There are so many people in India. It's indescribable. But if you just think of sheer numbers, there's more people in India than every person in North America, South America, and the UK combined. So we are talking enormous numbers of people. And the crowds in this city are just intense. And in a city of 5 million people where we started out, there are about 25 Caucasian people. And so everywhere you go, every person is staring at you. And in their culture, it's not necessarily even a terrible thing to stare longer than is normal for us, which makes you uncomfortable. But because you're Caucasian, the curiosity is there such that the stare never stops. As long as you are within my visible line, even if I can still see you 400 meters away, they're all staring, and especially at the girls, which, as dad, makes me really uncomfortable. I got my blonde hair girl. Jenny was blonde when she went and had to dye her hair basically just to blend in a little bit more, because just way too much attention. And male-dominated society, leering looks on top of it. This isn't just staring. This is really well beyond the comfort zone. So we got those factors. We got heat, garbage everywhere. It was just an overwhelming thing. And in the area we first settled in, it was a predominantly Hindu area where they're doing pujas, which is worshiping. And we arrived there right in the middle of kind of their festival season. So all night long, you got this blaring, screeching music going on that shakes your walls, and there's just this evilness about it. It's like you can't sleep. You got this noise, all of these factors. It was so overwhelming. And there were just these days where you just completely shut down. You're trying to start to learn language on this. But there were days where you go, we have to call, I cannot leave the house today. Like literally complete mental shutdown. I cannot go out the door. I don't have it in me. It was that brutal in the early days. But gradually, we started to learn some language, and God helped us adapt through all of this, and he was really faithful in providing the clear direction that, yes, you are supposed to be here, and I know this is hard, and he was acknowledging that, but he worked us through it step by step, and we never drowned. We came close, but we never drowned. And part of his leading was to move into slum ministry is the direction that we're heading. And we took our first trip into a slum about a year ago. And what an adventure that was. So the slum that we went into, we chose deliberately because it was a little bit smaller. And we said, okay, we have some Hindi now. We're going to go in. We're going to hand out some food packets. We took a few hundred pounds of food, and we were going to hand out like half kilo packets of rice and dal and a few things like this, and just bless the people on Easter. And when we went in, we were just so naive of what was going to happen and completely misunderestimated how many people could come and how fast, and we were mobbed. It was within about 3 minutes. As soon as word got out that there were people here with food, the crowd came, And it's not a crowd that is just standing there, hey, can I have one? This is a crowd that is practically ripping the clothes off your body. And when somebody gets a packet, two other people are jumping on them, fighting them to try and grab that packet away. Absolute desperation. It was truly frightening. We had hundreds of people. You couldn't get through them, and we were stuck there. People grabbing at your clothes, backpack ripped off so everything could be yanked out of that. It was like you were practically stripped by this crowd that is so desperate for anything they can get to survive. So that was our first experience. So basically out of that, I have to, and it's very fortunate that these people tend to be smaller, because I was able to get through them and get Jenny, get on this scooter and get out. And I had no idea that a little bit further up and just around the corner, they would block her in again. And so now she was trapped and away from me, and I didn't even know it. So I finally get myself clear and get up there, and then I have to clear her again. And these people are running down the major street after us for at least half a kilometer, still chasing us through traffic to get anything else they can. Sheer desperation. It was truly frightening. But as I was leaving in that part during the separation, there was these couple of elderly Muslim clerics, and they come up and they said, and they had a little bit of English, and they basically, between our language, I was able to get, we want to thank you because we know you were trying to help. And I told them we still had more and I would try and come back later, and there was no way I was taking Jenny back. But I did go back later, and I was mobbed again. A little bit naive, but it was still that thing. I felt it was important, felt God leading me that you have committed to these people and I've told you to go, and it may be uncomfortable, but do it anyhow. And so I went back. And through these types of things, over time, we've made some headroads into this place. After that, our next venture in was we tried to learn a little bit about, you know, how can we do this? Because everything we did, as we said, pioneer field. We had nobody to lead us. There's nothing set up beforehand. There's nothing you're fitting into where another organization has been there. There's a process. People know how this works. You're starting from square one with no steps have ever been taken. Nobody has ever been here before. So a very difficult situation. So we decided this last Christmas that we were going to hand out blankets. It's the one time of year when it is actually cold in India. It drops down to around freezing at night. And for people that are used to well above 40 degree temperatures, and in slums where children, many of them have no shoes even through the winter, and many of them going around in just T-shirts because they have no other clothes. People die in these slums every year. Many, many people die in them because of exposure. So we got some good warm blankets through funds that people like you have provided. And we got some good blankets. We got 300 of them, which should be about enough for one for every family. And they're about double size, so we can get probably two or three people under each of these at night. And watched another blanket distribution that had occurred within a gated compound, which gave them a little bit more control. I went with somebody that spoke much better Hindi. We coordinated with the men there ahead of time to try and organize a security force. So we had men from the slum, 12 of them, to provide security for us. We set up a process where we'd be doing it elevated from a truck so we couldn't get mobbed from the ground. We parked the truck next to a wall so you wouldn't be able to swarm over it quite so easy from the side. We set up a system where you have to go way down one end of the place to sign in with your name, and then you get a token, and then you got to come down and exchange it for the blanket. Well, in reality, as soon as people see where the truck is, the process kind of goes out the window really, really quick. And instead of having 300 people, they came from everywhere, and it was, with 12 men around, it was overwhelmed in 3 minutes. And the truck was swarmed. It was a human swarm climbing over everything, knocking over crowds, people getting trampled, climbing over the sides, the hood, trying to get in that truck from every way they could, so that blankets could not even be handed out. The men in the back are just trying to push the crowd so they're not hopping in the back of the truck with them. It was so frightening that at one point I actually contemplated, should we just cut the load, dump it, and just boot out of here, because it was dangerous. But I also knew in the back of my mind, if we do that, people are going to die. They're going to get trampled in this process. We just can't do it. So, bad mistake. When you go into a narrow area in a slum with a truck, make sure it's pointed towards the exit, because ours wasn't. And so we had to go all the way to the other end of the slum and turn around and come back. So fortunately, the crowd followed the truck. But when it got to the other end where it turned around, there were so many people holding onto the truck that it did not have enough power to move forward 1 inch, because they're all holding it and the engine does not have enough power to move. Really, really frightening. So at this point, it was the one time that being Caucasian actually worked for me, and I just shouted enough. And I'm sure they didn't know what that meant, but you know, white man shouting, this, what is this? And they startled and they actually let go for a second. And then I just moved really quickly through them, cleared them up, and I said, go. And the truck just beelined it and got out of there. But we got out. And the people followed the truck, because traffic is so dense in India. They followed this truck through the traffic all the way back to the store where these blankets originated, which is over a kilometer away, going in and out of traffic, and started gathering as a crowd at the store. So now the police have to come, because that's the only way they're going to protect the store from even being ransacked. Truly desperate situation. But out of that, we come back and we're just crying, because we're sure that these people are supposed to get these blankets. And we know the desperation, because you can see how they're fighting. We know people are dying in the slum, and how do we do it? And I felt God is really laying on my heart, but I don't want you to do it this way. I want you to do it in a much more personal way. So from there, it was really trial and error and a really, really difficult process. We tried so many different ways to get these blankets out. We tried going in with bodyguards, handing out a couple at a time, and every time it ended up the same way. We tried going at different times a day, tried to sneak in at night to do a few, tried to explain we would do a process where we'd do a couple houses at a time, and eventually we would get to your house. But it didn't matter what the process was. Every time it emerged the same way. I wasn't taking Jenny anymore. This was just way too dangerous. And every day, it would be, I'd be up against a wall somewhere with about 200 people gathered around you, and I can't get out, and they're just ripping everything off you. It was the same thing, really, really frightening situation, no matter how we tried to do it. And then God did three amazing things that started to turn things around. So this is really one of those situations where no matter how bad it is, God can still turn it around. He knew we were trying. He knew that we were in line with what he wanted us to do. We just hadn't done it the right way. You know, it was more down to the specifics. And so three big events happened. The first was I went at night, and I had no idea that there was going to be a wedding going on. And as soon as I pulled in, mob gathers. They're all coming out of the wedding. I'm getting mobbed. Things ripped away, the usual. And an imam comes, who's a Muslim cleric. He's like their religious leader, because he's there for the wedding. And he comes and he just tears a strip off the crowd and shames them all. And it's just the heads are downcast. He starts ripping all the blankets back from them, because you do not talk back to an imam. And then he turned around and he thanked me, and he started handing out the blankets with me. That was one big event that started to turn things around. The second, it deteriorated again after that. The second event came when I went in the daytime and I'm starting to hand them out. And this particular day, as I'm working down this lane, trying to give out a couple of houses each day, I get to a house where both of them were desperate ones. One was a very, very pregnant woman out to here, and it was her turn to get the blanket. And the other one was a man with polio who crawls on the ground, because they have really nothing to help people there. So if you have a serious thing like that, basically you're crawling on your hands and knees on the ground. And so how are you going to keep the blankets with them? Sure enough, give them the blankets. Immediately people grabbing them, yanking the blankets away. And this was the one time my Hindi actually shined. I was just so happy, because I was angry. And when you get angry, it's very hard to actually still talk well in a language that you're still learning. It was very difficult. But basically I said, enough. Every day I come and I try to help you people, and you're making it impossible. If they don't get these blankets back now, all of these blankets are going to another busty, another slum. And boy, did things turn around then. Immediately, people went and they grabbed the blankets back from the people that had taken them. They give them to that pregnant woman. They give them to the man with polio, and they walked them to their homes. That was the second really big breakthrough. And the third one was a couple of men, which we call men of peace, that are really trying to help you, came forward and said, I will help you with this process so this doesn't happen again. And we eventually developed a system where we would meet at random locations in the community outside the slum. I'd take about 10 blankets each day, and they would bring the same number of families from the slum to get those blankets. And we'd pick a time, a location, and at that time, people came from every direction. They weren't even traveling in a pack. And they'd emerge there, they'd get their blanket, they'd go under their burqa, wherever, so other people wouldn't see them, and they'd be dispersed in about a minute. And eventually, 6 weeks later, 6 weeks of daily getting mobbed, attacked like this, it had changed. And 6 weeks later, 300 families, the entire Bastille, had a blanket for their house. Just amazing how God moves, but it took a tremendous amount of effort. And things were still tough after that. We still going to visit, and every day you have great things that have happened, and every day Satan's there to meet you as well, and there's always somebody that comes that don't know why they're angry, but they're sitting there screaming in your face, or somebody's that's drunk that's there, or on drugs that's there, and they're, you know, shouting in your face. And we're to the point now where the crowd has said, and even some of the women says, if anybody bothers you, I will give them a tight slap, is what they say, which means I'm going to take my shoe off and I'm going to whack them with it. And it's been a really amazing thing. So we've been particularly getting to know a couple of families there, and one of them we were even honored. We went to visit recently, and they actually asked us to name their newborn baby. So tremendous honor. It was an amazing thing. And amongst these poor people in the slum, they also made us this tremendous meal, which, you know, was well beyond their ability and something they would probably eat only if there was a wedding or something like that. And they made this meal just because we were coming. It, again, it's such a huge honor. And in the back of our mind, it's, you know, I must say, it's that guilty thing, but you're going, oh, but this is made in a slum where the water is filthy, and I have no idea the cleanliness conditions. I am going to get violently ill. But you eat it anyhow, because it would be just devastating to them for having gone to this extent to honor you, and you reject that. And God protect us. We didn't get sick. It was an amazing thing, because everything there is very likely to make you ill. But it wasn't just the slums that God was leading us to. This was just one part of it, and it all started. We had going to India, we had this general sense that the medical work, as the paramedic, would be involved somehow, but we didn't have the broader sense of exactly what God was going to have us do. And a little over a year ago, God gave a vision to Jenny as she was dreaming, with such clarity that she had down to these minute details of how we were supposed to do things. Even for business, the exact price you were supposed to charge as you were doing business. It was like with that kind of specificity. And what God is leading us to do is do something that I'm calling total missional business. So what we are doing is a type of business that is not only like BAM, business as mission, where you use business as a means to be able to witness to people, but well beyond that. What we want to do is start business that not only allows us to talk to people about our faith, but also is used as a tool to mobilize prayer back here in North America, in which all the profits from it will be used to supply slum ministry, and planting churches within this particular one, and also expanding out to all of these other tourist locations, so that in time, our goal by 2030 is to be in 8 major tourist cities and 3 villages attached to each. So our goal is to plant 32 churches by 2030, all in Muslim slums. Huge, huge vision that God has called us to do. And as soon as we look at it, we go, impossible. But then we remember how big God is. And if he has given us this vision, and he has been so clear in opening doors for this to happen as well, that we're absolutely convinced that this is exactly where we're supposed to go and pursue, and he's going to make it happen. So what we are doing is we will be opening bed and breakfast businesses, starting in Lucknow, where we are, which has a great historic, beautiful architecture. There's many really cool things to see there. Then we will be expanding out to Agra, which is where the Taj Mahal is, and we will be going to all of the major cities in India where people typically go. But we're not just bringing people to see the sights of India. That's a huge part of it. If people are coming, we want them to see that. But we don't want them to see is just the sanitized version that tourists see. We want to then take those people on tours where we take them down the gullies. We take them to see how people really live and the challenges faced by the people living here so they really have a clear picture of what this means. And with an interpreter, for those that are a little bolder, to be able to interact with these people and ask questions about their lives. People are very open to doing that sort of thing there. And they love to talk with foreigners as well. So that as a tool, when people come back, now they've had a great time in India, they've seen the best sites, but they've also really, really learned about the challenges. And when they come back home to this church or wherever they've come from, they're on fire with, boy, we need to pray. Here's the challenges. This is the reality of what people are facing. These people need God, and this is specifically how we need to pray, because we need to get that out there and get a huge force, an army basically behind this. We're also planning on using 20% of all of the profits from this to go towards that sustaining the slum ministry, and all of the rest of the profits to channel towards going into these other locations to continue duplicating. So a very aggressive approach and a discipling approach to bringing people to faith and emerging leaders through it very quickly. So planting cell churches, getting them growing, getting people on the ground to sustain that locals, and moving on to a second location and just bringing more and more in. So huge kingdom business and very aggressive. We've also sensed from the beginning that there is a narrow timeline this, and I'm not sure why we're getting this. It could be because of this recent election. So you've probably all seen on the news lately, this new person named Modi has just been elected as Prime Minister of India. Very, very scary time for India. Modi is from a radical Hindu party who really stands for, let's get the Christians and the Muslims out of here. And if we kill them, that's okay. And the people there know that as well. So there is a huge risk of genocide occurring right now, and that may be part of this. The Muslims are scared right now. A little over a decade ago, there were huge riots occurring in India in which thousands of Muslims were killed, and this particular politician was extensively involved in both instigating that as well as stopping police from going in to try and help these people as well. So scary time for India right now. So desperate, need to do things really, really quick. But to do all of this, we need an army of people behind us. We need intercessors. We need everybody here praying for us. We need whole churches. We need prayer groups. We need prayer chains. So if you have any connections in those regards that you can plug us into, we'd love to get your email so that we can get information to you, especially when we have those really urgent prayer needs. We need timeshare partners where for $1,000 for a year's timeshare, we can send a couple, or we can send a couple of groups. It's up to 10 days accommodation in the bed and breakfast with a tour, airport, transportation, all of that included for $1,000 a year to get people coming, because we need lots of people to mobilize them. We need corporate sponsors, business sponsors to help with seed funds and that sort of thing to get ministries going. And especially, we just need people like you to actually come visit, be impacted by that, and come back on fire and doing whatever the Lord tells you to mobilize for this country. So at this point, we are excited beyond. We're exhausted because we just came back. But we are excited as well because God has laid this huge vision on us, one that by human standards is absolutely impossible. But God is bigger than that. And you know, for a God that can speak a word and create a planet, this is small peanuts. It's big by human eyes, but it's small in His eyes. And our goal is to see this grow and grow and extend beyond borders. We've got 180 million Muslims that are unreached in India right now, which is more than the entire Middle East combined, and virtually no work going on amongst them. All of the effort in India is almost entirely been directed towards the Hindu population because it's so large. But we're talking 180 million people here. That's huge. So we really, really need to reach those. So right now we're going to put on a short video clip. It's about 5 minutes. Just give you a few images of where we are and what we're trying to do. And then I'll wrap up quickly after that and get the worship team back up here.
You're the God of this city. You're the King of these people. You're the Lord of this nation. You are. You're the light in this darkness. You're the hope to the hopeless. You're the peace to the restless. You are. There is no one like our God. There is no one like our God. The greater things have yet to come, and greater things are still to be done in this city. Greater things have yet to come, and greater things are still to be done in this city. You're the God of this city. You're the King of this people. You're the Lord of this nation. You are. You're the light in this darkness. You're the hope to the hopeless. You're the peace to the restless. You are. There is no one like our God. There is no one like our God.
Did all that photography herself, so this is where we live and this is where we are focusing our efforts, so it gives you some sense. And we're really hoping that before we head back again, we'll be able to visit again and share more specifically about the slum where we will be focusing our initial efforts, so kind of ground zero for us. So we will be just outside the doors after service, and we would love to talk to you if God's been laying anything on your heart during today's service. We have photos out there of over 100 people from the slum that we're asking people to take one and dedicate prayer for that person, that face you see on that picture, for 1 year to prepare that ground for when we go back. All these people our Muslims from the slum where we will be starting, and we really want a pouring out of intercession for a whole year before we go back so that we can really, really work there. We've got email list to sign up. We'd love to have everybody's email who's not currently following us so that we can send you monthly updates on what's happening so you can pray for us effectively. If you're a prayer coordinator, if you have a prayer group that can pray for us regularly, a prayer chain, any of those things, we'd love to have you sign up so that we can channel into you and keep prayer requests coming to you as well. And we also have contact lists for any of those that are interested in coming to visit us in India, timeshares, business sponsors, any of those things that want more information as well. So I'll just ask the worship team to come back as I close us in prayer as well. And just as the image, then the passage that comes to mind at the end here is really just Hebrews 11. By faith, we are sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. Let's close in prayer. Lord, it was by faith that you sent out the many, Lord. It was by faith that Abraham left everything he knew and went out to a place he did not know and had never seen. And he did this by faith. It's by faith that Gideon went out with only 300, having pared down the entire army, and went to battle against an army as enormous as the sand, the number of grains of sand on a seashore. He did this by faith. It's by faith that David went out as a boy with an army standing back, afraid to do anything, with a sling against a giant and defeated him because you were behind him. In the same way, Lord, we know it is by faith that you will plant a church in the Faizabad Road slum in Lucknow, India. And it's by faith, with the help of these people and their intercession, Lord, that your church will be established across all of North India amongst the Muslims and spread beyond borders to reach the entire Muslim world. Lord, I thank you for these people, Lord. I pray you move in their hearts. I pray you bless this church and use them in a mighty way for the kingdom, Lord, both here in Hamilton to reach many, many more people, Lord. I just thank you for the wonderful news of hearing of what's been going on here in Hamilton, Lord, and within this church. And I just pray that you use them around the world as well, Lord. You already have. I thank you that their prayers have reached and impacted lives in ways that they do not currently know, but have impacted for all eternity. Lord, I thank you for these things, and I pray you bless us through Christ our Lord. Amen.